Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Defense! Defense! All the hard work, let's go!
College football today.
Our full throttle ahead in week number 9 right here on College Football Today. Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello, Gabe Morenci, and Hall of Famer in-studio Marshall Falk breaking down all the top 25 battles. Big battle in the Big 12 between Kansas State and Oklahoma. Oklahoma struggled to pick up this win last year, Rich, 42-35. But this is a dynamic Sooners offense that's rushing for around 225 yards on the ground and passing for 301 through the air with Kyler Murray. It's going to be a long day for Kansas State to maintain the time of possession. In the end, Oklahoma wins, but Kansas State does keep it within the 25-point number today.
Let me ask you a question, Joe. If Kyler Murray did not play outfield, was not a baseball player, what would his future look like in the NFL?
Right.
Would he play quarterback in the NFL?
Yes, he would. Yes, he would. It really would be bright. I think what we're watching Baker do, as we're watching him grow, what we continue to see Russell Wilson do, and just because of how the NFL, they have to adapt. They had to adapt to what the colleges are doing.
Right.
You can't bring in quarterbacks and ask them, okay, you haven't taken a snap from under center, you haven't dropped back, we want you to do this now. No, okay, do what you do, we're going to change and adapt to you. And he's one of those kids. This kid is special. He is special.
So I love Lamar Jackson. I thought he was the best raw quarterback coming out of the draft last year. I still would have taken him number one overall just because of his athleticism. Years will tell. We'll find out. Is Kyler Murray on the same level as Lamar Jackson in terms of athleticism? Because I thought Lamar Jackson was a better quarterback than Kyler Murray at this point in his career.
I'm going to say, so when we talk about like athleticism, we talk about there's a little thing. It's explosive. Like Lamar Jackson is explosive. Kyler Murray is explosive. So you can be athletic and not be as explosive. You can watch them and other fast guys that are athletes. But when they turn it on, it's like, whoa.
Right.
And he has that gear similar to Lamar Jackson. And I watch him throw the ball. Sometimes, he doesn't really see the whole field. But for the most part, as Baker did, when that ball leaves his hand, it gets to the receiver with some velocity on it. And I like what I see from the kid. His future would be bright if he was not in the A's system.
Throws with surprising anticipation for someone who does not have a ton of reps at this level. I mean, the anticipation he throws with, the way he's picked up that offense of Lincoln Riley, and let's not forget what this means for Riley, the development of yes. Baker, the development of Kyler Murray. Lincoln Riley is not even 40 years old at this point. I would not be shocked.
Oh, he's about to get knocks on his door.
I think he's going to get knocks on his door from the NFL. Would not surprise me.
Yes, and I don't think he'll go. Because he loves Oklahoma, waited for his opportunity, and with Stoops stepping down just to allow him, or should I say step up? Did he step up, Stoops? Okay, he stepped up and allowed him the opportunity to become the head coach, knowing that that program was going to lose him if they didn't. He's proven his worth already.
I want to get Marshall's take on coordinators, making the jump from coordinator to NFL coach or a college coach, because I feel like the transition for offensive coaches, offensive coordinators, seems more seamless. We've seen defensive coordinators struggle at the next level in terms of taking on added responsibility. Indiana and Tom Allen, Bo Pelini, Narduzzi with Pitt. Why do you feel that is? Is it just because they're used to teaching offense and they can get the defense? What is the reason for that, in your opinion?
I think the reason is on offense. When you're an offensive guy and you call plays, you allow the defense to just do their thing. Like, you're like, okay, we're going to do this. This is what we need you to do. When you're a defensive guy, you want to stop and you want to make sure your offense don't turn the ball over. You then start to suppress talent. It's so hard for defensive head coaches to really grow quarterbacks. You rarely see young quarterbacks grow and mature or become first round picks or even in the NFL become guys that can go out and dominate when they have a defensive minded head coach. And it's just in their nature. You know, it's just in their nature. Think about what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were all of those years under Tony Dungy. And then Gruden come in and win with that team because he allowed his quarterback and his offense to just go out and play and said, hey, defense, if you're that good, show me. Show me after we turn it over on a short field that you can hold him to a field goal or stop him or push him back. And that was the challenge. And then Tony Dungy learned from that. He goes to Indianapolis. He gets a Peyton Manning, and he backs up and say, okay, we're going to just play soft coverage. We're not going to try to slow them down. Go ahead and score as many points as you can. I think defensive coaches sometimes, they're control freaks. They get in the way. They're just so used to stopping people, they end up stopping their own team.
Yeah. Well, Kansas State and Bill Snyder are going to need some defense today.
Well, the one thing I'll say about K-State, and I'm with you again. I know we'll start to deviate before too long, but I'm with you again. I think they get a cover, maybe a backdoor cover. The only reason why is because they're finally running the ball. When Kansas State is successful, yeah. For Bill Snyder, they have to be able to bully teams at the point of attack. They have to run the ball with Alex Barnes,
yep.
Dalton Risner up front. They're finally getting production from the offensive line and the ground game. That's the only chance Kansas State has. If you look historically over the past quarter century, he has lost by more than 23 points to Oklahoma just one time. So he tends to keep it at least within the number.
And you add in the fact that Oklahoma, they struggle against big backs, stopping big backs. Last year, Alex Barnes, yeah, 6 carries, 108 yards. Like, you think you want to turn around and hand the guy the ball? But
that's efficient.
But the question is going to be, can Kansas State deal with the receivers of Oklahoma? I mean, these guys are game breakers. And, I think because of that and how much Kyler Murray, how much I love him and what he's going to do, I feel like Oklahoma will win and cover in this ball game.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think Oklahoma could put up a 50 spot in this ball game. I mean, Kansas State is giving up 173 rushing yards per game, 233 passing yards per game, negative in turnover margin, haven't generated a pass rush, 7 games, 11 total sacks.
Don't even show up, you're saying, basically.
And the offensive line is allowing 22 sacks through 7 games. And they
well,
don't
that won't be
really,
a problem because Oklahoma has a horrible defense.
Pass the football. So think about how bad that offensive line for Kansas State was playing at the early part of the year. If they can't score early, it's going to be the same type of outcome with TCU, where Oklahoma just gets bodies and bodies and bodies. And I saw a running back, and Rich and I were talking about it. Kennedy Brooks, I don't know if you had an opportunity to see him, Marshall. 168 yards, and he just looks so smooth in the running game. It's unbelievable.
They can put it up. They can run it. They can do a lot of different things. And in this game, they're going to have a lot of opportunities to do so.
This is where you pad the stats for Heisman.
You do.
Heisman
this is that kind of game.
Kyler gets that chance to be in contention because I think he deserves it.
He deserves to be there.
Behind in the race in large part because of the loss to Texas. But if you look at that game, he rallied back. Yes. I mean, he almost pulled off an upset. They were down by what? 3 touchdowns in that game at one point. Weren't they down by that much?
Mm-hmm. Against Texas. They were down 45-21.
Yeah.
What did he throw? An interception or two in that game? Just a couple of bad, some bad throws, some bad decisions were made in that game, but really gave his team an opportunity to win the ball game.
No doubt.
Yeah, we'll see. Another Big Ten battle. It's Wisconsin on the road to face Northwestern. No Alex Hornibrook. Wisconsin's won 3 of the last 5 by 17.3 points per game. This is a Northwestern offense, which, again, one-dimensional with Clayton Thorson. They're only averaging 78 rushing yards heading into this ball game. On the flip side, Wisconsin, run heavy with Jonathan Taylor. It has to be the game plan today. I think Northwestern pushes them to the limit. I like them +7. I think they get a 3-point win without Alex Hornibrook at the quarterback position.
Yeah, Jamie brought up an interesting point, which is some teams are going to suffer from not having their starting quarterback more than others. Wisconsin, not so much. Neither of us are in love with Alex Hornibrook, and he's more of a minority shareholder in this offense. This is John Taylor's offense. This is the O-line's offense. But now you go with Jack Cohn, a kid who has no experience, has not thrown a pass this season. He's from, of all places, Long Island. So Wisconsin always does a good job of coming out here to the East Coast, whether it's New Jersey, New York, and pulling players out. I think Pat Fitzgerald, with some time to prepare for that one-dimensional offense, you have some good linebackers. They're strong in the front seven. I agree with you. I think Northwestern not only keeps it close, I think they pull the upset. Wisconsin has been schizophrenic all year. And by the way, final point, that defensive backfield is a MASH unit. Three kids are out, and Dakota Dixon may not play. So Clayton Thorson could have a big day.
Usually one-dimensional offenses are like easy to stop, but Jonathan Taylor and how they run the ball and that offensive line, they dominate the line of scrimmage. And you often think, boy, if a quarterback is throwing the ball down the field and he does a lot of things, he's hard to kind of replace if he's out. But Kono have a tough time replacing Hornibrook because a game manager is even harder to replace because he's not going to lose the game for you. He's going to keep you in the game, yet can make the necessary throws. And I can't wait to see what they do in that realm. But I just feel like this is a game that Wisconsin will win. Northwestern will end up covering, and it'll go over. But we're going to have a close game. This is going to be one of those close, hard-fought games that come down to maybe one or two plays. And like I said, these type of games comes down to something that happens in special teams, or you lose the field position war in special teams, or a turnover happening in special teams.
I like to call them Big Ten rock fights. That's what they're just,
yards, you know, a cloud of dust.
Bare knuckle rock fights.
not a lot of oh my gods, right. And oh, did you see that?
Highlight it's reel plays. It's just football.
It's just
and
football.
If it's just football and you're at home getting seven, I think that favors Northwestern.
It's down to like three and a half.
Oh, wow.
Well,
okay.
Because of Hornibrook.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the news with Hornibrook.
Right.
But Marshall, when I look at this game as well, and when you look at Northwestern in terms of running the football, can they do it against this defensive front that's allowing 168 yards per game? They allowed 320 to Michigan and, more importantly, 211 to Illinois last week. But when you have an offense that likes to spread it out, they're not a pro-style offense. Can you do that in bad weather with rain and muck against a physical defensive front?
It's hard to change your identity. If you're a team and you spread people out and that's how you try to run the football, you can't now put your hand in the mud and get physical. That, I mean, if that's the case, then the defense is winning. They basically got you to play their type of game, and you're not doing what you do best or what you thought you did best. That's why you were trying to do it. So I don't see them even giving that a shot. So we'll see what they decide to do. But once again, I think even with Hornibrook out, I like Wisconsin. The line, it came down. It's at about 3.5 right now, and I'm gonna take Wisconsin with the win, but Northwestern will definitely cover.
Yeah, the underdog has covered.
What? Why does that?
There you go. There you
go. The underdog has covered.
Say it, Marshall.
In every Northwestern game this season, the underdog is 7-0 in Northwestern games.
Yeah. That's huge.
That is very important. Just don't blurt it out right before the game, though.
Wait, do you think it's gonna move the line?
I don't know. Well, here's
you're giving me way too much credit.
Well, here's the thing too that's important to note. We all talk about Iowa having possibly winning that division. Northwestern at 4-1 is leading the division, even though they're 4-3 overall. So they get this win.
Tons of motivation. That's not an issue.
They get this victory over Wisconsin at home, minus the quarterback. They'll be 5-1 within conference play, which is very
Fitz
important.
Does this a lot of years, doesn't he? Fitz tends to start slow at Northwestern, and then all of a sudden you look up and you're like, holy cow, they're 7-3?
Yeah.
They're busy with classes.
Exactly.
Busy.
Don't catch them in finals, you know?
Well, from one Fitz to another Fitz, Nicky Fitz.
Are you still on Nick Fitzgerald last weekend?
Well, no. Well, I
got to tell you something.
I was on LSU last weekend.
You know who you're going to be on next weekend?
We're on week number 9.
No. This is all geared towards Mississippi State, yes. Joseph. I think you're going to see Keaton Thompson pretty soon.
Okay.
I do. I just think Joe Moorhead is going to become very disappointed in the lack of a throwing game in his offense. Okay. Fitzgerald is Taysom Hill 2.0.
He is.
He's very
Taysom Hill's in the league, by
he's
the
very
way,
Tim Tebow-like in that he's a bruiser between the tackles, but by God, he can't complete passes consistently. Keaton Thompson in the bowl game last year, briefly in the opener this year when Fitz was suspended, actually looks like he has a lot of potential. I wonder if you'll start to see the young kid come off the bench as early as this weekend and supplant your Nicky Fitz.
Supplant my Nicky Fitz. Well, Nicky Fitz dominated Texas A&M last year, 35-14 in College Station. This is a Texas A&M offense that's passing and rushing for over 200, but more importantly, what Mike Elko holding opposing offenses to 78 rushing yards per game. And Jimbo Fisher, Marshall, has done a fantastic job in terms of coaching this talent up, something that I thought he didn't do at Florida State, even though he was getting top five talent.
Boy, I just go back to that contract he got. I mean, oh my God.
What would you do with $75 million?
I guarantee, like, you know it's coming. Like, that. Hey, it's coming. It's coming. It's in the pipe, and there's nothing you can do about it. But they are playing well. He's done a really good job at getting the most out of this team. And usually in an early transition, you don't have as much success. But I liken the job that he's done to exactly what Dan Mullins has done over in Florida. And I continue to see this team come out and play well. I like Mississippi State in this game. I feel like Mississippi State, not only will they win, I think they'll cover. And I just like the way that they are playing. And I feel like this game is like their type of game.
Yeah, I agree with Marshall. Here's what I look at when I look at this ball game as well. Mississippi State only allowing 114 rushing yards per game. I look at the matchup with Simmons and Sweat on the outside.
Love the two of them.
Going up against Texas A&M's offensive line that's allowed 23 total sacks in Starkville. You know Mississippi State's going to try and run the football first and then work off a play action. If they open it up early, they don't want to get into a shootout with A&M and that offense and Kellen Mond. So that's why I like Mississippi State. Same recipe like against Auburn. Low scoring, run the football, maintain the time of possession. And in the end, I think they get a 7-10 point win.
I'm in the quickly. Just here's my thought. Texas A&M, number four nationally. You mentioned Mike Elko. Number four nationally at stopping the run. Mississippi State has to run to be successful. That's number one. A&M, 6-1 against the spread this year. And give me the team that has more balance. Because of Kellen Mond and Travion Williams, a more balanced offense, Mississippi State, I just think they're heading south right now.
Yeah, we'll see how that game plays out. It's a 7 o'clock kick on ESPN. When we come back, we'll be joined by our comrade in arms, Gabe Morenci, live from Toronto with his best bets. Keep it where it is.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
And rolling into week number 9 of college football, we're joined by our comrade who's usually in studio, but instead we replaced him for a Hall of Famer, Marshall Faulk. Game Time Decisions host Gabe Morenci's with us. Gabe, how are you? Gabe's not with us.
I can be Gabe.
There is,
I'll fill in for him.
Only when they broke the mold when they made Gabe Morenci, I can tell you that.
Okay, so
let's jump into games before Gabe is on. We were going to talk about Michigan State Purdue. Let's jump right into it.
Now this is interesting because Brian Lewerke will not play in this ball game. It looks like it will be Rocky Lombardi for Michigan State, coming off a disappointing home loss to Michigan, 21-7, Purdue. Unbelievable. I mean, the way they dominated Ohio State last week, I mean, 49-20. I mean, dominating win. I still take the house money here with Purdue, but the only thing that scares me is the wet track, because that could affect their running game here.
Well, Purdue is all about the speed. I mean, you know, the fact that they have Rondale Moore, the fact that Jeff Brohm could get Rondale Moore from leaving the state.
Yeah.
You know, we need to see more of that with Rutgers in New Jersey, Indiana, your Rondale Moore. You could have gone just about anywhere. The kid stays at Purdue and is now one of the most dynamic all-around weapons in college football. David Blau is playing fantastically well. How about the defense?
Yeah.
How about Nick Holt in that defense led by Marcus Bailey? Nick Holt has done a tremendous under-the-radar job. Did it last week holding Ohio State to 20 points. Now, listen, I think Purdue can go toe-to-toe with Michigan State. I'm worried in this case of what their mindset is going on the road after that big victory last week.
The question before you go, the question is, were you more surprised that they held Ohio State to 20 or that they scored 49?
Held to 20, only because that Ohio State defense showed a lot of chinks in the armor this year.
Boy, yeah. That was
dynamic. That was good for Tyler Trent, too. They got the victory for Tyler Trent.
The young kid who was sick. Great story.
And that's what makes college athletics separate than the NFL. I mean, we see it, you know, showcased.
Very community-based type of a game.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, Gabe is with us. Gabe, how's the weather out there in Toronto?
Terrible. I'm standing in the rain. absolutely terrible. Trains, planes, and automobiles, and taxis, of course. But we're ready to rock and roll and get some action in before high noon today.
Well, we talked about the cocktail party. All three of us are on the Bulldogs. We think they'll be barking later today in Jacksonville. We think Jake Fromm steps up. How do you see this game playing out, Gabe?
Well, now I'm a little bit worried, with all due respect to the Hall of Famer, since Marshall's on this. And I'm feeling pretty good about myself, actually, that it takes a Hall of Famer to sit in my chair when I'm gone. So I'm patting myself on the back for that one. But, you know, I'm an underdog better. I wanted to talk myself into taking the Gators earlier in the week. But as game time approaches, you know, I just can't buy into Franks doing enough here. You know, the quarterbacks have struggled for both teams at times this season, but I've got more confidence in Fromm in a situation like this. Coming off the bye week, listen, I love what Dan Mullen's doing. I think the Florida Gators are going to be SEC contenders, and I think they're just a couple of years away from once again competing with Alabama on a yearly basis. I like Mullen that much, but I'm not sure they're quite ready to win this football game just yet. And with the line movement, I hate being one of these guys that says, well, I didn't like it at 7.5, but I like it at 6.5, because, you know, if you're betting a game and there's, you know, you don't like it because of 1 point difference, then you obviously don't love the game. But we all know it's such a key number. I think it's going to be close to the number. I think this game goes back and forth, but ultimately in the fourth quarter, I think the Bulldogs do enough to pull away and just barely get that cover. And keeping it in the SEC as well, guys, you know, how often do you see, and we see this in the NCAA tournament often, in which, you know, they talk about the big 8-9 matchup. And, oh, what a big upset. The 9 seed beat the 8 seed. And we all know that most of the time the 9 seed would be favored. We have a similar situation like this when an unranked football team with Missouri being a 7.5-point favorite over a ranked football team and a 15th-ranked team in the country in Kentucky. And, of course, Kentucky's one loss, an overtime loss on the road in a tough situation. But the fact that Kentucky just can't throw the football has everybody already has Missouri winning this game easily. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I'll take the better running back all the time. You know, yeah, Drew Locks was a flashy guy, but I like the fact that Kentucky can win this game in the trenches. If they fall behind, we're in a lot of trouble, all right? I'm not kidding myself. I'm not naive. I know offensively we could be a little bit challenged here, but you know, give me a physical Kentucky Wildcat team plus 7 points, guys. And Rich and Joe, you guys know how good Kentucky's been to me this year.
You know, we had this discussion before we came on air today, Gabe. This exact discussion, Kentucky, in my opinion, that line is too high. I looked at that at the beginning of the week. I thought it was going to be 2.5 for the home field advantage. But give me the physical defense with Josh Allen. Give me that running back with Benny Snell. I totally agree with your point. If you get behind early, if this is 14-0 Missouri, forget it. I mean, the game is over. But I don't think it happens. I think Kentucky is the better football team. Getting 7 points in this spot, I think, is borderline best bet material.
Well, I guess, you know, does defense matter anymore? I guess we're going to find out. You know, we always hear defense wins championships, and I still believe that to be true, but, you know, it seems like offense wins regular season conference championships and regular season games, even in the NFL right now. But I think Kentucky can do enough to slow down Missouri. We all know, guys, people have an attention deficit disorder now. People remember what they saw last, and what they saw last was Mizzou going up and down the field. That was against Memphis, and Memphis were a spent club. That was a bad spot for Memphis last week, and Memphis aren't an SEC team. Kentucky are. And, you know, listen, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You know, we've taken Kentucky nearly on a weekly basis, and it's funny, too, because talking to some other people in the industry, and you know, people that are, you know, handicappers, et cetera, there's a negativity about Kentucky because they didn't cover last week. Well, you know, I took them last week, and they didn't cover. Yeah, that's not their spot. You don't want to be laying 11 points for this Kentucky team. You want to be taking points, and it's exactly what we're going to be doing. Speaking of points, guys, how do I not take the over in this Houston and South Florida game? I was crunching some numbers. I'm going to sound like Joe Lisi here. I'll tell you what, Richard Marshall, Houston are averaging 74-point you know, 4-point plays per game in South Florida, 73. Huge matchup.
You got to put a decimal point in there if you're going to be a couple of decimal points if you're going to be Joe Lisi. 14.7.
Yeah, I know. I'm doing my best. I'm in the rain. All kidding aside, Houston run a lot of plays, guys. A lot of plays. 74 plays per game. It's amazing. And, you know, they've scored more than 40 points in every football game that they've played in. South Florida play a very, very brisk pace as well. There's just too much speed on the field here, and there's going to be too many offensive snaps for there not to be points. We've seen on a weekly basis, and I'm kind of kicking myself for leaving this on the table as much as I have had this year, but not jumping on these Houston Cougar overs more than I have. You know, it's amazing because they might have the number one pick in the NFL draft on the defensive side of the football, but their offense is really clicking right now. Herman did a great job putting that thing together briefly, but they have the new stadium, and I've always thought that the Houston program could be sort of a sleeping giant with the facilities, the football match state, the talent in the area, the Longhorns struggling in the past. I know now, obviously, they're on the upswing again, but I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the Houston Cougar program. I think, you know, so I think this is probably whoever has the ball last. It seems like a lot of people think Houston's going to pull away from South Florida, but I think this game comes down to the wire, but I'm going to pull a trick on the over in this game, guys.
Gabe, you're a little light with the picks this week. You only have about five up on the board, and one team that I've been high on at the start of the year, they got...
called discipline, Joe. I've had a problem. I've been out of control. I was betting more games than P. Rose.
Not in the same sentence.
I was betting more games than P. Rose. No, I've got a couple others I was looking at. The USC, you know, to be honest, the USC Trojan game today, this is one that I was ready to go with USC. And I wasn't overly concerned about the quarterbacks. It's quarterback you. And it was a battle, coming in to win the job here for Daniels. But they also have so many defensive injuries. You know, and you look at Arizona State. You know, Arizona State, every loss that they've had has been basically by a touchdown or less and against elite teams, or at least very good teams. Let's not say elite, but very good teams. Arizona State's been pretty competitive, and no one's getting rich laying points with Clay Helton, I'll tell you that much. So I've sort of talked myself out of a few games today, Joe.
Well, what about the game that I'm looking at 7 o'clock tonight, Texas and Tom Herman with a critical matchup in Stillwater against Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State? And I said to Rich before the show started that, you know, I'm getting the sense and the feel that Mike Gundy might have his foot in another job, because usually he's so defensive of his program, and this team isn't playing the way they should, and more importantly, we've seen players deflect. I sort of get the sense that this team could implode this year, and I like Texas on the road as well later tonight.
Yeah, so do I, Joe. These are programs going in different directions. I think there's been friction with the university and the coaching staff for a year or two. Listen, Pickens put a lot of money into this thing over the years, and the results just haven't been there. And I think last year there was a lot of resentment after the fact that basically, look, Stoops left at the last second, and you know, you had Mason Rudolph, you had Hill, you had Washington, and it was almost, I think, people in Stillwater sort of came to the conclusion that if it didn't happen last year, it ain't happening. It's not happening. And I've always thought this team has been underachievers, to be honest. I sort of look at them as a West Virginia Mountaineer team, and West Virginia are they obviously better this year than they are. But you know, Joe, I've never trusted Oklahoma State in a big football game. Yeah, I get it. Brandon Weeden won a big game a couple of years ago, and then didn't they lose to Iowa State that year as well? You know, if I think of what are big wins for Oklahoma State, they're few and far between. And trust me, I know, as we talked about, you know, being undisciplined and betting on these guys. Oh, you know, they're getting points at home here. Texas, you know, Tom Herman, you know, has lived up to the hype right now. You know, he has. To bounce back after that Maryland loss, you know, the quarterback situation, I know he's banged up right now. Ellinger is coming into this football game. I think there's going to be some points here, but ultimately I think Texas will be able to make the stops more so than Oklahoma State will. And as you stated, Joe, I think this is a program that's starting to unravel a little bit.
I think we're all in agreement in terms of Texas. I think Texas, as long as Sam Ellinger's shoulder is fine, Gabe, just a far superior team. Oklahoma State is doing nothing defensively. I mean, look what they did against Texas Tech and Iowa State, and Taylor Cornelius is not the traditional Oklahoma State gunslinger. Justice Hill, kind of quiet this year. You know, you've had people leave the program like Jalen McCleskey. So I agree with you. I think Texas, they realize they can win this Big 12 championship this year. I don't think that ends in Stillwater.
And, you know, honestly, Texas are hanging around right now, the playoff pitcher. And, you know, the Big 12 isn't the most respected conference. They need to sort of blow you away to get into the playoffs. But Texas is Texas. And let's be real. You know, politics, you know, everyone used to hate the BCS. You know, ultimately, I think the BCS actually wasn't that bad. I think they did a good job, the BCS. But politics and television ratings do come into play here. And I think it would be naive to say that they don't. So I think Texas is, you know, Texas to me is sort of like Michigan right now. Texas is kind of controlling their own destiny. I got to believe a one-loss Texas team would find their way into the playoff, guys. You know, it'll be interesting to see if they can get that far. But they're in the mix right now.
Hey, Gabe, I wanted to get your take on two teams. We've talked about it earlier in the show. I'm fascinated by what are the expectations for Washington State after they beat Oregon last weekend, and Purdue after their stunning upset of Ohio State 49-20. What do you expect from these two teams now that they hit the road?
Yeah, you know what I expect? I don't know what to expect, Rich. That's my problem. You just mentioned the two teams that have perplexed me the most this year, and I probably lost the most. Not so much Washington State, but I've lost quite a few times this year. I am running two or three times at least betting against Purdue. I cashed a few times playing against them, but I've had a hard time. I think I have to accept that Purdue's a better football team than I'm giving them credit for. And I don't know how Michigan State's going to respond after that. You know, this is really, really a tough game. This is why I didn't make it one of my best bets of the day. You know, how's Purdue going to respond on the road here, Michigan State, coming off a gut-wrenching loss. And you talk about a program that's sort of, you know, been on the ropes this year, Michigan State, throughout the year. They're sort of like a boxer that got hit early. Remember, like, they struggled in week one just to win a football game, and they got rocked a couple of times, and then they land a haymaker, and it's like, hey, look, Michigan State are back. It's like, no, I don't know. They're their knees are shaky. It's hard to know where Michigan State's mindset is at right now. Purdue's obviously the more enthusiastic football team coming into this game, and push comes to shove. You know, I look at Michigan State, and they use an NFL term. I was talking about the Eagles the other night. You know, and we keep waiting for for them to flick the switch. Wow, they're better than this. They're better than that. They're better than this. I don't know. Maybe they flicked the switch and a light bulb is burnt out. But the same with Michigan State. You know, we keep, Michigan State, you know, they can do this, they can do that. They're not doing it. You know, we're past the point of you are what your record says you are in the college football season right now. So if I had to do it, I would go with Purdue. And Washington State have been a freaking nemesis of mine for years, Rich. They just have been. I don't know why I bet against Mike Leach as much as I do. I think that the market overvalues them at times. yet we've talked about this. And once again, this goes back. I remember you and I talking about this, Rich, and we after week one, and Joe, in which Marshall San Diego State Aztec team bottled up Bryce Love in the first game of the year. And we thought, wow, it was the scheme they were running, and they were just so focused. But Stanford's been unable to get anything going on the ground all year long. Their defense, this isn't the same Stanford team. Like, I wanted to say, man, I got to take Stanford here. Give me Stanford. Like, you know, at first, you know, I was like, are you kidding me? Give me Stanford. And then as I dig down deeper in this game, you know, Stanford aren't Stanford this year.
Yeah, great points, Gabe. As always, great insight and information. Knock them dead today, and we'll see you next weekend.
Yeah, well, you can't wait next week. And with a tearing apart, it's going to be great to be back in the studio. But great show today, guys. Keep going.
Gabe Morency from Game Time Decisions, our co-host here every Saturday.
I agree with Kentucky. I like his take
like
on Kentucky.
Game. I don't like that.
You'll
Missouri.
Stay away.
If I had to pick that game, I'd take Missouri. But again, I just don't have a feeling that. I like Tennessee tonight. We're going to get into that. Some other SEC games. I like Mississippi State more than I like Kentucky in that ballgame. So we'll see how that game plays out. When we come back, we'll be breaking down our 12 o'clock best bets. Keep it where it is.
NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
We are back in just 18 minutes until the start of the 12 o'clock games, week 9 of college football. Before we get back into analysis, the DailyRoto.com NBA lineup optimizer is now available. That means you can use the same tools and projections that DailyRoto.com NFL premium subscribers are using to win each and every week, and you could use it for NBA DFS contests. You've heard a lot about the DailyRoto.com NFL DFS optimizer here on the Fantasy Sports Network and how its subscribers are winning tournament prizes on FanDuel and DraftKings in the thousands, hundreds of thousands, and the $7 million winners they've produced. Well, now you could double your pleasure and cash in on the NBA Fantasy Party 2. If you're playing daily fantasy sports and you aren't using the Daily Roto tools, projections, and optimizers, you're doing it all wrong and you're at a competitive disadvantage. Joe, you're leaving money on the table if you're not using the optimizer. So go to DailyRoto.com, click on Go Premium, and enter the promo code FNTSY for a special discount. And start winning today. That's DailyRoto.com. Click on Go Premium. Enter the promo code FNTSY for a special discount. And start winning today. DailyRoto.com, the site where millionaires are made. You know, Joe, at the manse this week, we finally closed the swimming pool because there were dead hamsters and other animals in it. And the young gentleman, I'm going to tell you a quick story. Young gentleman who closed the pool, Jimmy from R&R Pool Services.
Follows the show and...
I asked him. No, he doesn't follow the show, but he's going to, I think. I asked him, now that the pools are all closed, what do you do in the off season? And he said, I play daily fantasy basketball. Oh, true story.
All right.
And I said, you have to get the daily optimizer at Roto...
That's fantastic.
Yes.
That's great that you're pitching the Daily Optimizer.
That is a true story.
But you got to get them to follow our best bets, which we're going to do right now.
That's a given. I figured he was already following the best bets. But so I'm hurting Jimmy. He's got a little three-year-old. I said, Jim, if you want that kid to, get some new diapers.
Well, here you go, Jimmy. Here's my 12
NBA o'clock. Lineup optimizer.
NBA lineup optimizer. My 12 o'clock best bets. I already talked about Florida State. Defensively, they're allowing only 100 rushing yards per game, held opposing quarterbacks over the last four games to 47% completion percentage. They keep it within the number later today against Clemson, about 20 minutes from kick. We talked about no Alex Hornibrook for Wisconsin, no problem for Northwestern. I think they get it done at home. Wisconsin allowing 168 rushing yards per game, allowed 320 to Michigan 2 weeks ago, 211 to Illinois last week. Northwestern will find a way to get a gutty win in Ryan Field later today. And then a minor upset special. They're catching 1 point. They might be favored by 1 point. Now, to me, it doesn't matter. Two teams going in opposite directions. Arkansas converting 48% on third downs dominates Vanderbilt later today. Vanderbilt, over the last three games, Rich, allowed 219 rushing yards to Georgia, 280 to Florida, 290 to Kentucky. Back-to-back road games, the Razorbacks with a double-digit win at home over the Commodores. Marshall, your 12 o'clock best picks.
I like Florida State at home. I feel like they're going to cover. I think Lawrence, on the road, obviously, we got a chance to see him on the road. Tough game. This will be another tough game. I don't think they can. I don't think they'll cover. I feel like Florida State will at least do what they need to do to make sure that that they cover. I also like Northwestern. The home team, they always play well in this game. I feel like Northwestern, they have a really good chance at covering. I think Wisconsin is going to get the win, but without a doubt, I believe Northwestern will cover. And last but not least, Purdue. I just like how they are playing. And I fell in love with two things happen. You hold Ohio State to 20 and then you score 49. I like Purdue in this game. I feel like they're going to dominate the line of scrimmage and they should cover.
And I looked at that Purdue pregame. No bad weather as of right now. Now, I know there's about a 56% chance of precipitation, but right now in warmups, it's cold. It looks a little overcast, but a dry field in East Lansing.
Well, and Purdue right now not only has the physical talent, this team has confidence. I mean, you just took Ohio State down a peg. I mean, everybody was genuflecting to the Buckeyes, and they did it on both sides of the ball. I mean, this is a Purdue team that is headed in the right direction. And the more that Purdue wins, I think the poorer Louisville gets, because I think Louisville is going to throw everything they possibly can to bring their former quarterback back to Louisville.
I think it's
a step up in job. I do.
Do?
I think Purdue has a hard ceiling as to, if you look at the history of that program, recruiting, championships, Joe Tiller when he had Drew Brees obviously had a degree of success, but it's fleeting. I think Louisville has a higher ceiling. Plus, this is his alma mater. This is Scott Frost 2.0.
Yeah, the 2.0, the 3.0 right here. Here's the thing I think why Jeff Brohm stays, possibly. I mean, again, he's starting to build that program up. Louisville, from what we saw now, might be a complete rebuild. And where Clemson and Florida State are, and even Virginia Tech with Justin Fuente, I think they have a big jump up. And now Bronco Mendenhall with Virginia, not going to be easy for Jeff Brohm at Louisville, known as a basketball program.
It's got an easier division in the Big Ten, too.
Yes.
Big Ten West versus ACC Atlantic, a lot tougher.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
It is.
So I'm taking your side. He may want to stay put. You know?
I just think Purdue is an upcoming program. It's within the Big Ten. It's still known as a football conference. To me,
and a football school.
Louisville still think of a basketball school, right?
It's just if you're Jeff Brohm, it's just a good situation to have. You have another thing out there to make sure that that you get treated the right way, and that's what it's all about. I mean, I like what he's doing. I mean, just look at the excitement behind the program. Just a huge win.
Yeah, and speaking of that too, this team could be undefeated. They lost to 4 points by Northwestern. Yeah. They lost to 2 points by Eastern Michigan. They beat a dominant Boston College team. Let's be honest. Boston College now 6-2, a solid program. I mean,
why not Purdue contending in the Big Ten West?
Yeah.
I mean, next week it's Purdue, Wisconsin.
Yeah. And then Purdue, let's keep in mind that Iowa game really turned the tables for Purdue from a defensive perspective. They're only allowing 136 rushing yards per game, and that's the one MO why I like the Boilermakers here, because you have a Michigan State offense now without Lewerke and an inexperienced quarterback with LJ Scott.
How about no Felton Davis?
Yeah,
Felton Davis was clearly their best offensive player.
He hurt himself in Michigan.
You got Rocky Lombardi behind center. You have no Felton Davis on the outside for that passing game. Now, we see weird things happen all the time. It's always next man in college football or the NFL. Let me give you my best bets at 12 o'clock real quick. I agree with you on Florida State. Yeah. I agree with both of the boys in Florida State. I too many points in this type of a game. Too much pride at Florida State. They're beginning to play better, especially defensively. Yeah. If you could just have one or two extended drives, create some space for Cam Akers, keep DeAndre Francois off his back.
This
should be like a 10 to 13 point game. So I like the points. I agree with Northwestern. I mean, at the time for us, it was seven. I know the number is coming down.
Nobody knew Hornbrook was out then. So.
Yeah, and listen, contain Jonathan Taylor. That's what it comes down to. Contain Jonathan Taylor and open up Clayton Thorson. I like Northwestern. My other two, I'm on Iowa State. I'll tell you why. Maybe I need a cut of Matt Campbell's contract. I'm always hawking him so much. But, you know, the last 2 years, he has owned Cliff Kingsbury.
Dominated.
66-10 2 years ago. Who was Texas Tech's quarterback 2 years ago when they scored 10 points?
Mahomes.
That was Pat Mahomes. So Matt Campbell has the blueprint on how to beat Texas Tech and how to handle Cliff Kingsbury's offenses. He has blown them out in consecutive years. I think it continues today. So I like Iowa State at home in Ames. And finally, North Carolina. I like Virginia. You've been on Virginia wisely.
I'm off them this week. I took the step off.
But I think Virginia now in the mode underdog, they've been great. As a favorite by 9.5 points against a North Carolina team that's lost their last two by just a field goal to Virginia Tech in the last week against Syracuse. Larry Fedora has these kids still playing with a little bit of heart. Nathan Elliott played well at quarterback. So I think North Carolina keeps it close. They challenge Virginia getting 9.5.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa State, to me, I think the matchup in that ball game is Hakeem Butler, which is a tall wide receiver, going up against that Texas Tech Red Raider defense, giving up around 288 passing yards per game. I like Iowa State as an underdog. I don't like them as a favorite per se as much, but we know Ames is a very difficult place to play. So we'll see how that game plays out. I'm on Virginia this year, but I took a step off here. This is a very tough ball game. I mean, Marshall, how hard is it for kids when the season starts to slip? Especially we see it in the NFL, but more importantly in college where you're not going to possibly make it to a bowl game. How hard is it to maintain intensity each and every week?
It always depends on your core, like how many seniors you have on this team and how much focus. If you know you're coming back the next year, let's say you got a lot of juniors, a lot of sophomores, some freshmen playing, you continue to fight on. You step it up, and you're trying to make sure that you end the season on a positive note, getting ready for next season. If you have a lot of seniors playing, it becomes a very disappointing thing. You understand that this season is kind of tossed away. Your opportunity to make it into a bowl game, it's done. It's not a bad thing, but you really start to focus on your studies.
Right.
You really start to, like, understand that. And if you don't have a shot at the NFL – you really start to understand what life as a civilian, not being an athlete, is going to be like. And your focus really starts to go there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's a good point.
Yeah, because you see Larry Fedora now. This is a make it or break it year, in my opinion, for him. I think he'll be out of a job in terms of North Carolina. They've had two close ball games against Syracuse now and Virginia Tech, played toe-to-toe and lost them. So that's the only reason why I don't like North Carolina is the mindset now. You lost two tough games. Didn't pick up those wins. Now you're struggling.
Is there anything left in the tank?
Right, exactly.
Now, Marshall brings up a great point, too, because I never thought about it in terms of seniors versus underclassmen. Underclassmen are still fighting because next year's another year.
Yeah.
Still trying to impress the coach. Want to get more PT next year. I wonder if that encourages staffs then to start looking down the roster and say, maybe time to get reps for that redshirt freshman.
Well, you don't want to do that. I mean, because usually a senior is a guy who's waited his turn. And regardless of how it's going down, you want to give him that opportunity because as an athlete, you pay attention to what and how the seniors are treated. The upperclassmen are treated. That's kind of they've been there. They helped build the program. It's their opportunity. So you pay attention to that. And you guys were talking about Larry Fedora and Carolina. I always look at this. I'm telling you, when you have quarterbacks come to the NFL, and they start to have more success than they had in college. I always look at coaching, and I question coaching. They didn't win enough game with Pat Mahomes with that talent. Carolina didn't win enough games when you see what's going on in Chicago. Something, you look at the programs, and you have to question, wow, why didn't guys win with talent like that? And it takes me back to, I remember my decision to go to San Diego State. At the time, Southern Miss was an opportunity. And Curly Holman, actually LSU was an opportunity. Curly Holman left LSU, yeah. I mean left Southern Miss and became the head coach at LSU. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go to LSU. He took over. My head coach showed me the resume. He said, this guy couldn't win with Brett Favre.
Right.
So you start to understand when you have these quarterbacks, they come in and they show this talent, but yet you didn't see it in college. You wonder what happened, i.e. Tom Brady. Like, yep. What happened? Right. Why wasn't this talent fostered? Why didn't you nurture it?
See, that almost makes me want to do a study on that. Yeah. That's really fascinating. Guys who were maybe mediocre or underutilized, because Trubisky's another example. Trubisky came in, he wound up playing one season, but Marquise Williams was the quarterback for North Carolina, and I always wondered when I saw Trubisky take over and then gets picked number one overall, I'm thinking like, holy cow, why was he only used for one full season?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, here's the thing as well, when you say, why did he bolt? He lost 214 receptions and 23 receiving touchdowns that went out the door with him. Guys like Matt Collins, guys like Ryan Switzer.
Oh, at Carolina you're talking.
Yeah. So he made a proper decision as well, because when you see the type of talent that, you know, North Carolina has in the program now, they can't move the football consistently. They haven't found an identity, and that's a great point that Marshall brought up. Jeff Bauer, the former head coach of Southern Miss, Jeff Bauer is one of the coaches that just, I know he had some personal issues, but disappeared, never got back into coaching.
And was perennially successful.
Yes, Tyrone
never
Nix
got
was
another
his
opportunity.
Defensive coordinator back in the day, and Tyrone Nix.
It almost reminded me of Mario Cristobal until Cristobal got the Oregon job. Right. Cristobal was successful at Florida International. They booted him. Nobody ever gave him another shot. And I thought, oh my God, he was winning at Florida International. Right. How is somebody not hiring him? Jeff Bauer just disappeared. Yeah, had to be
great head coach.
It's got to be a decade, right?
Yeah, so yeah, probably about that time. Fedora came in, replaced him, and had great success at Southern Miss. Yeah. And then from that point, you know, it's been a while. You know, Ellis took over. Ellis Johnson, and was 0-12, and then they bounced back after that. So we'll see how that plays out. It's interesting. How about this game, South Florida, Houston? We touched on it earlier with Gabe. I like South Florida just to cover this game. I mean, when you look at Houston as a whole, they're allowing 333 passing yards to opposing offenses. Blake Barnett, he struggled over the last couple of games with consistency, but I think they make enough plays in this ballgame. Mm. Keep it within the number. I could see King and this offense winning this ballgame, but the Bulls do cover the 7-point number later today.
Yeah, I know why Gabe likes the over. Houston has not been held beneath 41 points in any game this season, so Derek King looks like the second coming of Greg Ward II.
Yes.
In Houston, that type of a quarterback, athletic, making plays through the air. I was this close to calling this a best bet in Houston's direction.
Really?
But without Ed Oliver, if he's questionable or he's not 100%, it kind of goes into that question, which I hope to have in the third hour, which is, how do these future first rounders handle their final seasons in college when they're not 100%, sort of the Nick Bosa question? Now I wonder about Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver loves football, has an amazing motor, brings it on every down, but now he's injured. And I wonder if the kid wants to come back.
When I look at it, I think it comes down to quarterback play. I mean, when you look at Barnes, 10 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, inconsistent. Charlie Strong wants him to play better. But then when you look at King, Derek King, 23 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, take care of the football. Very explosive. I look at this game, I say Houston will win, but South Florida, they're going to make enough plays, and they're going to run the football. They're going to run the football and try to control the line of scrimmage, try to control the clock. They are going to cover.
And to your point about Oliver, I mean, he stayed when Herman bolted, which he could have left. I mean, it was a 5-star recruit and could have went with Tom Herman to the University of Texas, because that's why he came to Houston, to buy into the program. But he stayed there with the growing pains of Major Applewhite, and you got to credit him, because, I mean, he will be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. His
thing I thought as a true freshman was, and I know it's been overplayed now, he just looks like Aaron Donald to me. And Aaron Donald is a player that I loved in college. I mean, he was our Bednarik Award winner a couple of years ago, which surprised a lot of people. And then he just took flight in the NFL. This is a big game for both of these coaches, because Major Applewhite and Charlie Strong did not have solid debuts at their schools in 2017. One team is 7-0, South Florida. Houston is 6-1. Huge game in the American.
And both coaches were handed the keys to the car that looked like a Ferrari. They didn't have to do much in terms of that and haven't really taken that Ferrari
to another level.
To another level. So we'll see how that plays out. When we come back, we'll be breaking down the 3:30 and 8 o'clock games. Keep it where it is. Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello, and Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk in studio, live from Studio 34.